Welcome back to the Nerd Podcast. I'm Jordan.
I'm Doug.
And you are listening to Never Ending Retro Dialogue. Today we're going to enter the fifth dimension.
Oh, the fifth dimension, where not all is as it seems.
No, today we are talking about Rod Serling, The Twilight Zone, and the world that it spawned.
Yeah. Never ending influence.
Yeah,
the Twilight Zone.
Never-ending influence. And I think one thing I wanted to talk about was, I don't think that most people would consider this a nerd topic, but I don't care.
Wow, no. You don't think the Twilight Zone's a nerd topic?
I think
it's
the Twilight,
classic TV.
I think the Twilight Zone is a nerd topic, but I think that there we'd be surprised that we're covering it based on our track record. But what I wanted to say was that I nerd out about Rod Serling really hard as a writer. So.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as a writer, producer, I mean, the things that he was able to do. And look, as we said in one of our episodes, maybe it was in episode zero. I can't remember anymore.
There's so many episodes.
There's so many. Look, being a nerd about something is just having a passion and a love for it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think I'm hoping that some of the topics that we cover here in the future will be a bit surprising to people because... It's the whole point is everyone finds joy in different things, right?
Right. And I think that's why I like this episode is because it is kind of a surprise, like, and especially because The Twilight Zone is quite old.
Oh, very, yes.
So we're tackling something that's old and something that might, because it's not comic book related.
Nope.
It's not.
Although they did a graphic novel on Rod Serling's life.
Right. I want to mention that later.
Okay.
I'm glad you said that because I totally forgot to write that down on my notes.
We'll put a pin in that.
Yeah, I'm going to put that down right now.
But no, it's old TV, right? And how do you categorize it? I mean, it's some horror suspense, some sci-fi. And in so many episodes, you've got this underlying dig at humanity that was happening at that time,
right?
Which was the genius of his writing.
Well, and if you look at it, a lot of that's still going on today.
Absolutely.
So you watch these episodes and the themes that he was talking about are still pretty relevant.
Oh, absolutely. You could redo some of the classic episodes and you would think you were talking about today's world.
Yeah, if you just put them in color, you wouldn't even know it was shot
right.
So long ago. But yeah, I'm glad that we're talking about this because ever since... maybe 2 or 3 years ago when I really started to look into Rod Serling. As a creator and a writer, I started to nerd out on this guy pretty hard because of his writing and his output.
Yeah.
So I think we're giving the man his due respect today as we enter the Twilight Zone.
As we enter it. All right. Join us if you dare.
Yeah.
So, now how were you first exposed to it?
To the Twilight Zone?
Yeah.
Probably through my dad, probably through the William Shatner episode, I would assume.
Okay.
I don't really remember that far back, but because it's always kind of been there, the Twilight Zone. But I think that's the first one I remember is there's something on the wing.
Oh my gosh, right. And that's the episode that even if you're not familiar with the Twilight Zone, people know.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because you see it utilized in pop culture.
Yeah.
You know, in new movies or whatnot. People watching something scary and they see that you see Shatner's face in the window just staring out.
Yeah.
But oddly, I love that episode. I'd be hard pressed to find a Twilight Zone episode I don't like.
Right.
But that's not one of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean I haven't watched the whole thing, but when I do watch it, I'm like, oh, there are better episodes than that one. But I think just because William Shatner was in it, it was so famous, and my dad really likes classic Star Trek.
Sure.
So I think
isn't that an interesting correlation, because I was introduced to Twilight Zone because my dad, he absolutely loved it. So I can remember, I think it was WGN, played reruns at night quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And he would have it on. I think at some point maybe Nick at Night did Twilight Zone reruns, but I definitely know WGN did. But my dad loved Star Trek too.
Yeah.
So, but you know, Twilight Zone was interesting because you had that suspense to it, right? Or you had that sci-fi feel vibe. There's always a little twist there. you never knew what was going to happen, but it was never overtly, you know, violent or scary to the point where it was unwatchable.
Right.
Which I'm sure a lot of that has to do with the fact that it was on TV. And there's, I mean, you can read pages upon pages upon pages of the problems that he had with sponsors, right, and the studios and stuff, because he wanted to go a certain direction, or they were trying to stifle what he was already trying to say. Interesting enough, I just learned recently, I never knew this, and we were talking about it, and I'm sure some people would be like, well, you got the internet, why didn't you know this? I didn't realize he went to college in Yellow Springs.
Yes, he went to Antioch, and I might have learned that when I was in college. I don't remember. Hmm. But I always thought that was really cool, because I had a story idea about going to, a short story idea about going to school or learning from Rod Serling,
yeah,
in Antioch, because I think he also taught there occasionally, oh, after he graduated. I could be wrong, but I definitely know he went there. So,
wouldn't that be interesting to take a class, yes, from him?
Wow. Well, I believe that the writer J. Michael Straczynski did do that.
Really?
Is what I read earlier. So,
interesting. Anyone who doesn't know who J. Michael Straczynski is, he is an amazing...
He's a prolific writer.
A prolific writer. Some great comic book stuff. Oh my gosh, what's the... Midnight People, is that the name of it? Oh my gosh, know. Midnight Road? Oh man.
I don't know, but he worked on the real Ghostbusters.
Yes. It's going to kill me that I don't remember that. That was an amazing read, though. Very... And so what's interesting, though, is now that I think about it, so that was very sci-fi, suspense. So you could see the influence there now that you think about it.
Yeah. I would say Google it. But I don't know. I'm not going to be able to tell you how to spell Straczynski.
Oh, my gosh.
It's, yeah, one of those last names that you can't really spell.
Just sound it out. Yeah. It'll be okay.
Yeah. So let's talk about Rod Serling a little bit.
Let's talk about the man himself. The myth, the legend.
The first thing that I thought was really cool was he was a Christmas baby. He was born on December 25th.
Oh, no kidding.
1924.
That's awesome.
So, given your love for Christmas,
yes,
this makes sense that you love Rod Serling.
It's all coming together now.
Yeah, so he was born in 1924 on Christmas Day.
That's wild.
He was a gift to the world.
He was. Yes, he was. We didn't deserve it.
No, we definitely did not deserve it. He was born in New York, but he has ties to Ohio, mm-hmm, as we talked about. He lived in Cincinnati for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I always think of him as partly at least an Ohio writer.
Right.
Which makes... Well,
and didn't I share a photo with you that one of my cousins shared on Facebook where he had gotten some kind of grant for a writing contest, and it was like out of Dayton, Ohio.
Oh.
Oh my gosh. Now I'm going to have to,
yeah,
look into that. But, which is when I first realized, why does he have Ohio ties? Why is this?
Yeah.
And then you find out, oh, he went to Yellow Springs,
yeah,
which isn't too far from here. So that's pretty wild.
If even an hour, maybe an hour and 5 minutes.
Not even an hour.
Something like that. But it's very close. And if you've never been to Yellow Springs and you're in the Ohio area, I recommend you go. It's a nice little artsy town.
Dave Chappelle lives there now, right?
Dave Chappelle lives
there. Or lives around there.
Yeah, he lives around the area. But they have like nice bookstores and a comic book store and all these local shops.
Just a great vibe.
Good vibes.
So it's interesting. You go to Yellow Springs, and Antioch is not operating anymore, correct?
It is, but it's uncredited, I believe.
Oh, okay, okay. But you go to that town, and you get that vibe. It's just a very laid-back, chill vibe. So unassuming, and super friendly people. And you have him that comes...
Yeah,
from the halls of their, yeah, university,
yeah,
and just, but I'm sure that's obviously probably a lot of, you know, because he had a lot of anti-racism, anti-war, yep, leanings, and they're all there in his writing. I'm sure that helped form some of that. Yeah. I would think.
Yeah, his service in the war definitely helped, yeah, but I'm assuming that he. Because I read that he was part of the school newspaper and dealt a lot with social issues, so mm-hmm, I'm assuming he was always that way, with the heavy themes of about society, his take on society.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of interesting because I was doing some research about him.
Yeah.
And it said that he was generally considered a class clown. Can you imagine that?
Well, you got to have a warped sense of humor, right?
That's true. I guess,
I mean, you have to come up with some of the stories that he wrote. I mean, you've got to be a little twisted, so yeah. I get that.
But it's interesting because, like, because he was a class clown, a lot of the teachers and stuff just thought he was a lost cause.
Hmm.
So can you imagine what would have happened if he... So he was encouraged by his 7th grade teacher to go to the debate team.
Oh.
And he was, like, really good at it, and he joined the newspaper from there and everything. But can you just imagine what the world would be like had he just been discarded?
Wow.
Like they were going... Like they just thought he was...
And, you know, that could have easily been done,
yeah.
You know, in the 40s.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm just like, wow, we dodged that bullet narrowly.
Hmm.
But, yeah, so it's just interesting to me to think that he was deemed a lost cause and then he goes on to become Rod Serling.
Right, right. You know,
TV's angry young man, as they called him.
Yes.
He graduated high school in 1943, and then he joins the Army because what's going on in 1943? World War II.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Have you ever heard of World War II?
You know, I think I may have cracked a book or two about it.
Yeah, it's a little skirmish. But
they made some board games based on it, right? Yeah,
just a few, and maybe some video games too, I'm not sure. Okay. But he joined the day after he graduated, he joined the military.
Wow.
Yeah. And he was not a tall or brawny guy.
No, so, he was extremely short, yeah, right? Yeah,
I think wasn't I read that he was like 5'4 or something. Which is not to disparage anybody who's 5'4.
You know what? No.
You're the same height as Rod Serling. You're the height of greatness.
There you go. That's it.
So, but I just thought that was interesting because it was like right after, the day after high school. And I was like, man.
Could you imagine doing that?
No, I can't imagine. I'm a coward.
So how long did he serve?
He served until, I want to say it was 46.
Okay.
Or 45, because the war was over.
Gotcha.
Wow. Yeah, he went to the Pacific Theater. He wasn't in Germany. He was in the Pacific Theater. And one thing that's interesting about that is I read a book about him, and he was almost killed by a Japanese soldier.
Uh-huh.
Like, the Japanese soldier had him in his line of sight, and then another American soldier killed the Japanese soldier.
Oh, my gosh.
So Rod Serling almost died right there.
So we got teachers saying he's not going to be worth anything.
Yep.
And then we got soldiers. Then we got enemy soldiers.
Wow. The whole world was against the Twilight Zone.
I guess so. But we got it anyways.
We got it. And it's important to note that while he was in the Army, he started doing boxing.
Mm-hmm.
Because he'll go on to write several stories about boxing.
Yes. Okay.
And so he was a featherweight, but I think he just got beat up a lot. I'm not sure, but I am assuming that is the case because he was so small. Yeah, so he did that. And so much of his writing is about war and violence,
mm-hmm.
which comes directly from the boxing and the military. There's a story that he was watching a guy give a comedic performance,
uh-huh.
a fellow soldier, and a food crate freakishly landed on this man and decapitated him. And that warped him for the rest of his life.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It was an Allied food crate, I believe, that decapitated the soldier.
What did it fall from?
It must have been a plane.
Oh, wow.
I don't know, but man, I read that story and I was like, no wonder you see the world the way you do.
Well, that'll affect you.
Seeing that kind of death, not only of the enemy, but of...
That is so random. Okay.
Yeah, I know. I read that and I was like, how do you even respond to that?
No.
How do you deal with that?
Jeez.
And he kind of had what I guess we would call PTSD now. Probably.
Sure.
Because it said that he suffered from flashbacks and nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I don't think they had that diagnosis.
Well, of course not. No.
So he had, I would say he had PTSD. And yeah. He used that to shape his writing a lot. Or not to shape his writing, but to, he used his writing to deal with it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, which I love the idea of using your writing to cope, not cope, but to manage
sure.
your emotions and stuff, because I write all the time and I'm like, yeah, this makes me feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So I just love the fact that there's something you can kind of relate to, like when, obviously I don't have PTSD, nothing that bad, but it is kind of a timeless writer thing to channel your emotions through that. So.
Well, there's something therapeutic about it, right? you just kind of get into your own realm, and you're creating worlds or people, and it kind of gives you that escape, yeah, that release.
Yeah, it's very just interesting to know that the writers have always had that.
So. Yeah.
So then after that is when he goes to Antioch College, after the war, not after the crate killed the guy, but after the war. And he gets a bachelor's degree, and starts writing for radio. Oh, he was already writing for radio because he was doing the Antioch radio.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He was, little known fact about me, I also used to be a DJ in college.
Look at you guys.
So basically, I'm Rod Serling.
You're Rod Serling. You're this generation's I'm Rod Serling. Yeah. I will keep my eyes peeled for falling boxes of fruit.
Yeah. Because
I do not want to be your inspiration. No. I'm sorry.
you already inspire me every day. So. But yeah, so he was working on radio, and then I think he decided like TV was the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so he moves to New York in 1954, and then the next year, I don't know if you know this TV show or movie or whatever, but it's called Patterns.
Okay, no.
Patterns is his first big thing.
Okay.
He wrote it in 1955 for Kraft Theater Television, and it comes out, and it is a smash success, and people are just blowing up his phone. It's ringing off the hook because people want him to write for them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically, it made the biography that I read made it sound like he accepted all of it at once, which I love about Rod Serling.
Get the work while you can.
Yeah. So that and I forget what Patterns is about. I just read about it today, and I used to know what it was about, but it's something. Look it up. It's about something.
Okay. Just look it up. We're not going to do all the work for you. I mean, we're just going to talk about stuff.
We're just here to talk.
Yeah. Jeez.
So, but then, in 1959...
Here we go.
That's when The Twilight Zone premieres.
Man.
1959. That's crazy.
So, 30 years later, well, maybe 25 years later, I'm sitting there watching it on my TV.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Well, and then 25 years after that, I'm sitting there watching on Netflix. You're
sitting there watching on Netflix, yeah. Oh my gosh.
That's nuts.
I did not
think about it that way.
It's kind of hard to wrap your mind around it. I mean, that obviously speaks volumes to how, you know, we've talked about timeless things in a few episodes now. But I mean, that truly is because, I mean, as we already said, the subject matter, I mean, if you colorized it, put modern actors in there, you really think that you're talking about today's society with a lot of the stuff. And then obviously so many things have been influenced by it, which just speaks volumes for, I mean, we're talking, you're getting close to 70 years of Twilight Zone now.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Jeez, that's crazy.
And they just... Are they still doing the new Twilight Zone with Jordan Peele?
I think he was
hosting a version of it, right?
Back in 2019, they started up the Twilight Zone again. Not for the first time.
No.
Yeah. But probably for the most famous time because Jordan Peele was involved.
Yeah.
But I think it's over now. I think it only went 3 seasons.
Gotcha.
But okay. I could be wrong.
Because that was only on streaming, right?
With CBS? Yeah, I think it was CBS or Paramount or one of those two.
I didn't get to watch any of it, so I don't know if it was any good.
We do have it at the library, I think.
Oh, well, okay.
So if you ever...
Good to know.
Pretty sure I've seen it there.
But can get anything at the library. Yeah, you can get...
Except for the latest volume of Donald Duck and Uncle Scrooge that I wanted to read. Not in the library system, but that's another thing.
Those sons of guns.
Yeah, that's another thing. I guess I have to buy that one.
Yeah.
So it goes. Poor but anyway, guy. Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone.
So Twilight Zone. So maybe tell them a little bit about it if they're unfamiliar with Twilight Zone.
Oh my gosh. So Twilight Zone would always start. You'd see a scene, right? And then it would get to a point, and then Rod would come off from the side, and he would give this nice monologue, right? And then it would always, you know... Could only find it here in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
I wish I could give the whole monologue.
Yeah.
But, and then you go back, and of course, most people probably know the do 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 do. It's just such a simple theme song, but man, you know it immediately what you're in for. And so you usually found there was something amiss. whether you're in space and you find something weird, or you're in a small community and you think you're being invaded by aliens, or you're in a plane and you think you see a gremlin sitting on the, right. the wing. I mean, it was just, there was always something a little twisted. Your reality was being warped. And I think we can kind of see now why. But it was just 30 minutes of just what in the world is going to happen. You knew something. You knew, okay, what's it going to be this time? What's the twist? What are we going to find? And sometimes it was simple, and sometimes it's like, oh. And what's interesting is I can remember watching some of them as a kid and not getting a lot of it.
Yeah.
Right? What's the one we were just talking about? The Monsters
Are Due on Maple Street?
Yeah, The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. No clue. I had no idea as a 10-year-old kid what they had to do.
Right.
But now, sitting there and rewatching it, you're just like, oh, yeah, okay. We can be pretty self-destructive as humans, yeah. can't we? And I mean, that is absolutely one of my favorite episodes.
For sure.
It is so good. But then you've got the time. Is it Time Enough? Time Enough at Last. I'm horrible with the names of the episodes on anything. But that has such... You've got Burgess Meredith,
yep.
right? And it's a post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah.
And he finally gets... the chance to read. He's got all these books. That's all he's got is time. He's got nothing but time. Time enough at last. And then what happens?
He breaks his glasses.
Can't read a darn thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just... So, sometimes it's just simple things like that. Just the little quirks of life yeah. that, you know, oh, you know, you think he's going to make it, and then this happens.
Yeah.
I don't think, and maybe you can correct me, so my absolute favorite episode is The Dummy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know The Dummy... the original Uncle Ben starts in it, in it, Cliff Robertson, and he's a ventriloquist, and he has a dummy, but the dummy talks to him, and you spend this whole episode not knowing if this is actually an evil dummy, or Cliff's just a drunk that, you know, because he has a problem, and... It is just such a spooky episode. In my mind, one of the spookier ones.
Yeah.
My kids to this day, I probably showed that episode to them way too early in their lives. And like anytime the Twilight Zone would come on after that, they would run to other rooms. They didn't want to have they still don't want to watch the episode.
Yeah.
And it's just such a great episode. But I still can't tell if there's like a little bit extra meaning to that, or if it just happens to be one of these ones where it's like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if, you know, you've got this possessed doll? So that's a good one. There's another good one. What's it called? Eye of the Beholder.
Yeah.
That's probably another classic one. That
definitely a famous one.
That people know, even if they're not big fans. One of the great things about The Twilight Zone, watching it in reruns, is seeing all the young actors
yeah.
who were on it that weren't big then. And then you know them, like William Shatner. Oh, that's Captain Kirk.
Right.
You know, I knew him as Captain Kirk first, obviously. Claude Akins was in a couple episodes. Burgess Meredith, like we talked about. The guy who played, oh my gosh, I'm going to forget his name, but he was Quincy... Adams, the medical examiner, he was in The Odd Couple. Oh my gosh, what's his name? And but he was in a couple. He was a pool shark in one. So many people, you know, made their way into their craft through The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
It's just absolute. But, you know, there was one every week, right?
Right.
I mean, my first season that I have on DVD's got 5 discs on it. Oof. I mean, there's like 50-some episodes,
a lot of,
I believe.
Episodes.
I mean, it's absolutely beautiful.
Well, the thing I like about The Twilight Zone episode wise is that it's all anthology.
Yes.
So you can just watch them one, like, in whatever order. So if it's on, you can just watch it. But I'm also just a big fan of anthology stuff in general, like in comics and in TV and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So what a good format, because you don't... I mean, each episode can be different. It could be a different theme. You can tackle a different... One can be... There's a one that's a Western.
Yes.
That I'm sure you love.
Yep.
What is that one called?
Oh, gosh. I knew you were going to ask that.
But anyway, it's a Western, and so, but you can do that, or you could do it set in modern day, which was, you know, back in the late 50s, early 60s,
mm-hmm.
or you could do the future where they go into space.
Yeah.
Each episode was something different, so I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. And you don't need any previous knowledge right. to what's already happened.
All you need to know is about the human condition.
Yes, absolutely. You can pick it up wherever you want.
Yeah, there's some... I'm more familiar with the first season. I haven't watched... I mean, I watched a smattering of the other ones, but, like, I sat down and watched the first season, and there's some really, really great episodes. There's one about a guy who's on Mars, I think. He's a prisoner on Mars, and they give him a robot.
Yes, yes.
Oh, God, that's a good one. But, like, the whole... I mean, the writing is just there for... And a lot of it was written by Rod Serling, but then, yeah. like, also he... Had a lot of really other good writers. I know Ray Bradbury wrote an episode, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
So they just had a lot of great writers, and I think that's the foundation of the show right there. Because I don't think that like writing is necessarily given a lot of thought in the terms of creation, probably sometimes.
Yeah.
Unless it, I mean, for TV. Like, obviously for comics and books, that's the main sticking point. But like, I think sometimes for TV, things just get changed so much from... when you start writing to when the actual product is finished. That,
mm-hmm.
But Rod Serling really fought against that, and he fought to keep control,
yeah.
creative control, on his show, The Twilight Zone. So,
which, you know, in hindsight just seems ridiculous to me, because how could you have something that was so, in my mind, so obviously a hit?
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not sure how it was received back
then. I don't know.
You know, obviously, I just know that it's, you know, popular because we're still talking about it and watching it today.
Yeah.
I mean, you can find it practically anywhere to watch, to consume. And, you know, they're writing comic books about them. There's something there. It'd be interesting to talk to someone that actually was there when it was airing to see what it was actually like. Because even that coming out in 59, my dad would have only been like 2 years old. So even my dad was... watching it in reruns, right? So
I'm sure that at first it was probably perceived as like maybe too much. I don't know. You would like, because I'm sure that TV wasn't, there probably wasn't as much. Well, there wasn't as much TV, period.
Yeah,
but there probably wasn't as much social commentary on TV as he was fitting in there.
Well, and were they even picking up on it?
Oh, that's a good point, because that's the thing. His formula of using sci-fi or horror.
Yeah,
you could insert an issue.
Yeah.
And it could just be hidden.
Yeah.
But some people could get it and some people couldn't. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Because I think he was frustrated because he couldn't write about his issues, the issues, like, straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of thought, like, what if I make it about
this
or that? So, I think...
What a stroke of genius.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, his writing is so good. And, like, the fact that you said we're still talking about it in 2022
mm-hmm.
just shows you that it holds up. I mean, he's one of the great... TV writers of all time.
Absolutely.
So, which is part of the reason I love him, because, like, he's one of those writers that I started to learn about and I really look up to now. So, but, and I do want to say, now that we're talking about, you know, his biography and everything, Twilight Man
mm-hmm.
is the comic biography of Rod Serling. It's really so good. It captures his entire life. And kind of puts it in, almost bookends it with the Twilight Zone kind of feeling.
Yeah.
Now, did you read this yet?
I have not. No.
Okay. It's on Hoopla.
Okay.
Which, if you're not familiar with Hoopla, we talked about it recently. It's a digital library service
mm-hmm.
where you can check out lots of comics. You can get books, but there's a lot of comics on there too. But I read this maybe 2 years ago, maybe a year ago, and it gave me all this information about his life. And I would love to reread it, because it's just so well done.
Mm-hmm. Just shows you how much, what you can do with comics, right?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because, like, you can, I mean, I've had, so I've also started to read a biography of his that was a book of prose.
Okay.
Of nonfiction. But the thing with that one was it also goes over every single episode of The Twilight Zone, so it's like 600 pages long. Oh, and Night Gallery. So it's like 600 pages long.
Night Gallery.
Well, yeah, so it just breaks down everything. Like, it talks about his life and stuff, mm-hmm. and then when it gets to The Twilight Zone, it does every single episode.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh.
It goes, this is the one where this happens, and then it talks about the episode, and I'm like, I want to watch these first before I read about them.
Right.
So. But whereas The Twilight Man, you don't really get that kind of thing. You just mm-hmm. get just straight up his whole life. So I would recommend, if you're interested in the history of television, if you're interested in Rod Serling, if you're interested in The Twilight Zone, read The Twilight Man. I can't tell you who it's by. I totally forget. But just look it up. That's how easy it is.
Yeah. Again, Google it.
Google it.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. But, yeah, so Night Gallery. We talked about that a little bit. Now, I've never personally seen Night Gallery, but mm-hmm. I know about it.
Yes. I can't say much about it. I remember watching it. It's another one of those things where if it was on, Dad would have it on. And probably, most likely, if I watched an episode of Night Gallery now, I would go, oh, no, that's Twilight Zone. Because I'm sure I probably have morphed it all together. Yeah. Into one big glob of Ron Serling-ness, you know?
Yeah, they did seem pretty similar, mm-hmm. except for, I think, The Twilight Zone was less always horror, whereas Night Gallery seemed to be more of a horror show.
Yes.
But it's still kind of the anthology format, but I think in Night Gallery there were three stories per episode.
I believe that to be correct.
And Rod Serling was like the curator at a museum.
Yes.
And so that show ran from 69 to 73. Mm-hmm. But he gave up most of his creative control on that one because he was tired of fighting them. Mm-hmm. Which just shows you that, like, even the best can get.
Well, sure. It's got to, after how many years of...
of fighting them?
Yeah.
His whole career, basically.
Yeah.
His whole life, actually.
Yeah. It's so, no wonder the dude smoked 4 packs a day.
That's the other thing. I was going to say, he smoked 3 to 4 packs a day.
Yeah.
So in 1975... has a heart attack.
Yeah.
Has a second heart attack.
Yeah.
Has a third heart attack and dies.
Yeah. That's the one that did him in. They were going to do like open heart.
Oh, he had a heart attack while they were doing surgery and he died.
Yeah.
And I just, to this day, wonder what would have happened had Rod Serling lit. Because I think you said, what, 51? He was 51
when he died? He was 51 years old. Yeah, 50, 51.
I just wonder.
What does American television look like? If he either A, makes it through the open heart surgery, or, you know, doesn't smoke 4 packs a day and just goes. The problem is with that is that's all the stuff that made him what he was, right? Yeah. So maybe, or since he was already starting to give up creative control because he's tired of fighting with the corporate a-holes.
Yeah.
Maybe he just goes off into retirement anyways, and so he doesn't do anything else. So I think we've got to take The Twilight Zone for what it is and enjoy it.
Well, and that's the thing, is we're lucky that we got The Twilight Zone because it's so good. It's so classic. It's one of those timeless shows, like Batman the Animated Series, where you can just watch it wherever and whenever. I mean, obviously, they're two completely different shows, but...
Yeah. The only thing with Twilight Zone that dates it is it's black and white.
Yeah.
Right? And there's... the effects are minimal at best.
Right.
You know, you're talking early TV. It's all story. It's all story.
Which I think is part of the reason that it stands out so much.
Of course.
It sticks around so much because they do put so much emphasis on the story. And because Rod Serling was the writer and he wanted to emphasize the storytelling of the format. Because I think he went from radio to TV because I don't think he thought radio was realizing its full potential or something, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know for sure. But, you know, so he's in this new brand of TV, a new medium of TV. And he just wants it to be as good as possible and to tell the stories. And he went out there and he told the stories he wanted to tell, and they're still around. I mean, they're being collected on DVD. They're on, I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but it was on Netflix, but I think you can get it on Amazon now.
I was going to say Amazon or Hulu. It's on one of those. You can get it. You can find it in a lot of places, but I mean, might as well just own it. My gosh.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that's worth buying, I think. You have it on DVD, right? You have the first season?
I have the first season, which it was a Christmas or birthday present 1 year. But, so what's funny about that is that same year, I'm pretty sure the same year, my wife got me Tales from the Dark Side.
Okay.
So, kind of one of those, which ran in the mid-80s. Again, I think we watched it in syndication on WGN. But another, now, that was much more horror-leaning anthology. But you can definitely tell it's got its influences. I mean, the Twilight Zone with influence, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's trying to think of the other anthology series that you can call on. I know they did an Alfred Hitchcock Presents in, like, I think they ran that two different times.
Okay.
I want to say they did one, like, in the late 50s, right around the same time as Twilight Zone. But then, like, they rebooted it. I'm not sure it would have been called that back in the day. So you had that.
The one that comes to my mind is Amazing Stories.
Did you watch that? Oh, my gosh, yes, Amazing Stories.
Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories. That was very Twilight Zone-y.
Yes, of course. And then, of course, you got Twilight Zone, the movie.
Right.
Where didn't they take... it was all done in shorts, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or not shorts, but it was an anthology movie where you had the different stories. And they redid There's Something Out on the Window, right? Because John Lithgow, I think, was William Shatner's character. And then, obviously, the most modern example we can come up with is Black Mirror, I would think, anyways.
Yeah.
So anyone that doesn't know, if you've been living under a rock or you don't have streaming services... it's a British series, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And anthology, like, there's some of them only have a handful of episodes per season, if I'm correct. Or we only have access to a handful.
Yeah.
But very much in the same vein as you've got a lot of social commentary in these stories. Some are sci-fi. Some are more horror, some are more, you know, rooted in the real world. But there's, that was one that when I came across it, the first couple episodes, I didn't quite get. And maybe it was my, they're just trying to be a modern day Twilight Zone. So, you know, whoop-de-doo. And then I forget what episode it was. I want to say Bear was in the
White
in the
Bear, title. I think you said.
White Bear. I don't know. I could probably Google it here really quick.
Well, you take our own advice.
Yeah, maybe I should take our advice. And man, I loved that episode. I've probably rewatched that one a handful of times now. And so I was just hooked. And so Maddie and I went through and watched all the seasons. And just super good. It's so well done. As you can tell... There's got to be some kind of influence, whether they grew up, you know, watching Twilight Zone or whatnot. It's so great.
Well, I mean, the thing is, Twilight Zone is so iconic and so well known that almost anything with a twist ending probably has some kind of rooting in the Twilight Zone, because that was Serling's thing. He would write a story, you'd get to the end and there'd be that twist. I mean... Talking about what Rod Serling wrote, we talked about this right before the show. He wrote the original draft of the script for Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yes, yes.
And I think they changed most of it, but I think the part where they find the Statue... Spoiler alert. The part where they find the Statue of Liberty, I think, is Rod Serling's bit still.
Spoiler alert for a 60-year-old movie. Yeah,
for 60-year-old... You never know. You never know.
We're going to get hate mail now.
Well, when they dig up this time capsule after the war to end the world of civilization, and they find this podcast, and they don't have ways to play movies.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Because we're gonna archive this, and we're going
to
bury it.
This is the service we're providing for future generations. We're going to tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
That's it.
We will rebuild society in the nerdiest way possible.
We will be your generation's curators.
Wow.
Oh, man. This has just taken on a whole new level of importance.
I don't know that I can bear the responsibility.
Golly, I tell you, man. Yeah. Time to put on my big boy pants.
I don't know. But, any kind of twist ending. Because, like, I mean, we were talking about anthologies and stuff. I even think Goosebumps was probably influenced by the Twilight Zone.
Oh, sure.
Because that's a little bit of horror, a little bit of suspense.
Yeah.
And the twist ending.
Absolutely.
So I've been, you know, R.L. Stine is another writer that I really like and look up to. And I imagine that he probably liked the Twilight Zone because he was, you know, he was into that creepy stuff.
Almost imagine. Has to be, right?
R.L. Stein. If you're listening, R.L. Stein.
Let us know.
Tweet me. And let me know if you liked the Twilight Zone.
Please be a friend of the show.
Yeah. I can't wait till we get more friends of the show.
Yeah. I'd like that.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I don't know. I think his writing is timeless, and I think anything... So many things are probably consciously, unconsciously influenced by Rod Serling that it's probably like so much stuff that we couldn't even name it all.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, of course. It's anyone who writes sci-fi or any kind of horror has to probably give some kind of nod there.
Yeah. And probably even anybody who writes TV.
Oh, absolutely.
Can kind of study the beats and...
Well, yeah, because so even if you take away the theme or whatnot, the way that he was able to tell a story from this point to this point and keep people engaged and keep them coming back episode after episode after episode, I mean, is absolutely astonishing. Yes, there are some episodes that are stronger than others.
Yeah.
But every episode is just great.
Yeah, that's one of those rare TV shows where it kind of always hits it out of the park, at least for me.
Yeah.
I don't know, because, you know, not every TV show has good episodes all the time, but
yeah.
I think under his vision, I think that speaks for the control of a creator.
Mm-hmm.
I think under his vision, it was strong. I'd be interested, like you said, I'd be interested to know how it went, because I feel like it was probably an uphill battle for him.
Yeah.
But I want to know how it was received by the audiences. Like, were they ready for it? Were they just like, this is weird?
Could you imagine sitting there, used to watching the Jack Benny show or something, and then all of a sudden that comes on?
Oh, my God.
Do you even know who Jack Benny is?
I know who Jack Benny is because I took a class in college about American comedy.
Mm.
So I know Jack Benny. But our audience may not know Jack Benny.
I was going to say... Yeah.
He's rolling up his sleeve. He's ready to tell you about Jack. This is a Jack Benny podcast.
I'll tell you all about Jack Benny.
But
gather around, children.
Oh, my God. This is absurd. But, yeah, so would you say The Dummy is your favorite episode of The Twilight Zone?
The Dummy is, yes. The Dummy is my favorite. Just, I think there are other episodes that have more meaning and are more meaningful and are more important, especially when you look at the social commentary. The monsters do on Maple Street is a perfect example. You look at that and just see how quickly humanity can take a downward turn against itself. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay. So, yes, Eye of the Beholder, another one. My gosh, I mean, that message is still relevant today, too.
Right.
Too much so. So, that aside, I love those episodes, and they have much more meaning. But The Dummy, because I just love the little horror.
Yeah.
And, you know, is this dude crazy? Is he not? What's going on? And I won't spoil The Dummy because you guys can go and watch it. I'm sure you can find it somewhere.
Yeah.
It's I don't know. I think it's a great episode. The Time Is Enough is another great one. And you just, your heart breaks for him at the end. You're just like, oh, man.
I'm trying to decide which my favorite, because I haven't seen them all, but of the ones that I've seen, my favorite is either Time Enough at Last or Monsters Do on Maple Street. I feel like since I just started rewatching it like a couple months ago and I got to Time Enough at Last, that one is more fresh in my memory and the acting is so good because Burgess Meredith basically has to carry the whole episode by himself.
By himself.
For about half the episode.
Yeah.
But he's, even before everybody disappears, he's the star and he's like he's shining on that episode.
Absolutely.
And I relate to him because he just wants to read all the time.
He just wants to be able to read a book.
Yeah, and he's got people around him who don't.
Yeah.
Who don't want him to read, which is like barbaric to me.
Right.
But so those episodes really stick out to me. I think The Monsters That Do on Maple Street might be one of my favorite ones just because I have a track record of really enjoying like paranoia horror.
Yeah.
which is weird because I'm kind of paranoid in real life. But I just find that to be, because I think it's hard to write. So when you pull it off, because you're not really seeing anything. Mm-mm. So it's like, how do you write horror that's not there? You have to get into their mind, and that to me is such an amazing skill. But I really love that episode. I saw it, and that to me is almost like the pinnacle of Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
That episode. But then again, Time Enough at Last is also like, it's probably more I don't know if it's more famous, but it's probably one more people will know because Burgess Meredith was in it. And
that could be.
He was this before he was the Penguin? Yeah, this was a couple years before he was the Penguin.
It was before he was the Penguin.
Yeah.
I would say that the monsters do good Lord.
Maple Street.
Gosh, thank you. brain fart. Now is probably more well known because after 60 years, people have been able to dissect the social commentary on it. Yeah, that's true. So I think those are the episodes that end up being that carry on further, just because now that you've had time to look back and go, oh, well, boy, this is what he was talking about, and this is what he was talking about. And they kind of ring a little bit louder than just the episodes where you've got the twist or, oh, my gosh, this happens. But, I mean, they're all fantastic.
And I'd be interested, because there was an 80s version.
Yes.
And a 2003 version or 2002 version. Mm-hmm. And then the 2019 version. I'd be interested to see how they all compare to the original one, because I've never really seen...
I've not seen any of the Jordan Peele one.
Yeah.
And I didn't watch any of the one from the early 2000s. I do remember us watching the one from the 80s, and I can't remember much about it. And I think that probably says a lot.
Right.
Especially because those are harder to find. I'm sure if we YouTubed them or this or that, you could probably find them somewhere.
Yeah.
But it obviously just didn't hit the same.
Yeah. I'd be most interested to see the 2019 version because it seems like Jordan Peele had maybe not as much creative control as Rod Serling because he didn't create the show.
Yeah.
But it seems like it was all unified under him.
Yeah.
And that seemed to be the winning formula for the original one. So I'd be interested. And they had they invested money in it because there was a pretty good cast, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was famous people in each episode or something. I don't know. But, or at least people we know from stuff.
Sure.
So it felt a little bit more like it. But the only thing is, I don't think it's black and white.
No. I don't think it was
either.
And
I think that black and white is what makes it so iconic, because the Twilight Zone is black and white. You know what I mean? It's just black and white.
It's a warped version of reality. So there are no colors.
I think because of the time period being in black and white, it's just like it's set in the consciousness of the public and the pop culture that the Twilight Zone is black and white. I think it dates it, but it also makes it timeless in a weird way.
Absolutely. No, I get that.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'd be curious. What are your guys', if you've watched The Twilight Zone, what are your favorite episodes? Let us know through Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. I got to believe, with as many episodes as there are, there's going to be people that different ones hit differently.
Yeah, definitely.
Whether it's, they watched it with their grandparents or their dad or whoever, and or it spoke to them. Because, again, it's so different watching The Twilight Zone as a 10-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And then watching it as a 45-year-old dude.
For sure. You're talking about not picking up on things.
Yeah.
Because I saw parts of The Twilight Zone as a kid, right over my head.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that was a visual gesture, so I had to say it out loud. But now when I went back and rewatched it again, I was like, wow, there really is something to this. Like, it's not just throwaway TV.
No. Yeah.
There's
substance to it.
Yeah.
There is and that's why it's still around.
Yeah.
That's why it's still around. That's why people still watch it and people still enjoy it, because there's something more there than just... That's why we talk about that and we're not doing a whole episode on Tales from the Dark Side.
Right.
I mean, it was great. I enjoy it. I own it on DVD and I still watch it. But, I mean, it obviously doesn't have the ever-reaching influence that Twilight Zone does.
Nor does it have the iconic voice of Rod Serling.
No, this is correct.
He just steps out of the shadows and is like, you're about to enter the fifth dimension. And it's like, boom, I'm in Twilight Zone.
Here we go. It's on.
It is on. Yeah, so, yeah, I think his voice, because I can hear it now, you know, when we're talking, and it's going to be there forever.
And it's just, and to, you hear him talk, and then just to watch his facial expression as he's talking, you know, his lips so close together, and he's just like, he's talking almost out of the side of his mouth as he's just sitting there, and he's got that cigarette in his hand, and it's, I don't know, it so casual, which also, I think, lends to it. You just got this guy sitting there in a suit talking, like, oh, you know, no big deal. Get ready for this, though.
Yeah. It's just, and I think that dapper look is also part of the timeless thing, because it's like, oh, it's the cigarette. Well, not the cigarette smoking man. That's X-Files.
Don't do it.
But,
X-Files. Yeah. We didn't even talk
about the X-Files.
I mean, there's got to be some influence there, too, right?
Definitely. Well, you know, Kolchak the Night Stalker influenced the X-Files.
So. That's true.
So, but I'm sure something from Twilight Zone. I'm sure that Twilight Zone also influenced.
It's the family tree.
Yeah. It's a little, that's the thing about TV and writing and creativity in general. It's a little bit of a pastiche of everything that you've ever taken in.
Well, of course.
You know, even my stuff that's just simple cartoons is like, it's a little bit of this, it's a little bit of that.
Put it all together, see what we got.
It's a stew, it's a gumbo.
Yeah. A quilt.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, just snuggle up under your quilt of creativity.
Yeah.
There we go. I think I've had some Scooby snacks.
Yeah.
For anyone who listened to the previous episode. Yeah.
We had some
oh, gosh. Good golly.
Yeah. I nerded out pretty hard about Rod Sterling tonight.
Yeah. This
Rod Sterling. I said Sterling.
You did say Sterling. But you know what? That's okay. He's timeless like Sterling Silver.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
There you go. My gosh. Absolutely. Well, guys, please hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Let us know what your favorite Twilight episode is. Twilight Zone episode. Ooh. Oh, my God. Twilight episode.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh. No, no. No shiny vampires.
Yeah. I'd love to hear, like, from different generations of people.
Absolutely.
What their favorite or most memorable Twilight Zone episode was. And I guess it can be, I mean, it doesn't have to be the Rod Serling episodes, but those are going to be the ones I'm most familiar with. But
of course, if you've watched the Jordan Peele one, tell us about that.
Yeah.
Or the one from the 80s or early 2000s.
Yeah. So just let us know what you think about the Twilight Zone and Rod Serling.
Yeah, and if there's an anthology series that we missed that you think is right up this alley, tell us about that too, because we love discovering new things.
Yeah, and like I said earlier in the show, go read Twilight Man.
Go read Twilight Man. And as always, stay nerdy.